We should warn people, Chester.
Yeah.
We should warn people before Mike makes his plugs that we should probably put a warning at the beginning, like, this will only make sense at all and be interesting at all if you have to watch the show first.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing a horrible job at actually describing what happened. It's very much a layman's terms of what exactly happened. We don't do it justice. Check it out. At least watch the battles themselves. I think you could do without the
It's a very quick show if you fast forward.
And it's all available online. Just Google Roast Battle. It's on Comedy Central. Full episodes, free. Nice and easy to watch.
Or check out the podcast description for links to the episodes discussed herein.
Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, how's it rolling?
You know, it's the calm before the Super Bowl storm. I feel like it's when you realize you're about to be depressed for the next 7 months because there's no football.
I'm depressed for other reasons, but...
Why are you depressed?
Well, I mean, you know, given what's going on in the world and what happened this weekend, and, you know, especially as a Jew and in our history, and for those who know me well, they know... you know, things that are important to me and things that matter to me. And I'm speaking, of course, about the tremendous tragedy that occurred on Saturday, which is that I had been watching Roast Battle for the last several days, as you ordered me to, and I had been taking copious notes. I mean, I literally, as those who know me know, I had thousands of pages of notes. And unfortunately, I lost all my files. So all my hard work went for naught. And when I discovered this, I was so distraught that my reaction was, I'll put it this way. My wife said that was better than everything we've seen in Roast Battle so far. So I was heartbroken for my stupidity, which is obviously the only thing I was speaking about before. And my wife was entertained. So unfortunately, I don't have the notes. I was planning drops where I was going to put in every of the funny jokes that they said for us to discuss.
Wow.
So this podcast is not going to be as good as it would have been. And you can all blame Google because Google Calendar screwed me.
Yeah, a good you know, nerdy computer craftsman never blames his tools, they say.
Yeah, the world is pretty crappy right now, so let's talk about people crapping on each other. Let's talk about Roast Battle instead.
All right. Did we bring our guest yet or no? Yeah.
Here to discuss Roast Battle with us. He's back for the second time on our podcast, I believe. Last time he was here to discuss Hamilton. This time he's here to discuss something almost as high-minded, and that's Roast Battle. Mike Bloom, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm assuming now that there are three of us back, we can finally do our own three-person wave. We can finally challenge
Whoa.
Them.
Although yes. Those guys do not, we learned this season, those guys will not talk. No matter what you ask them.
Well, except for Jamar was in the regionals.
Yes.
And
but did make it to
that. wouldn't that have been a conflict of interest, though? Because I wonder that, too. And I'm sure we'll talk about the regionals kind of being a fallacy on their own in that they're not really representative. You know, people that lost their battles in the regionals still ended up going to L.A. But I'm pretty sure if they put Jamar up there, I mean, is there like a second string wave person to put in there that could pull their ding dong out for those random interstitial moments?
He would have just had to be in the wave also.
I'm just pointing out, we're discussing Roast Battle, which is the most, like, in terms of, you know, the language used, the most inappropriate show on TV. So this is going to be get an explicit tag, this podcast. So, Mike, you don't have to say ding-dong. You can if you want, of course.
Okay. That's big old dick.
Calls it ding-dong.
Let's go back to ding-dong, actually.
All right. I like
our intro where we, like, forgot to bring in the guest. You said and you know like 4,000 times.
Wait, says the guy whose first word on the podcast every single week, like clockwork, is long pause, which I edit out every.
Yeah, time. Yes. So this is like our 102nd episode or something.
Yeah,
but if you were listening,
it's shitting on each other, but it's not going to be funny. So it's half like Roast Battle.
No, this is essentially like if you just turned it on for the first time, you would think this was our debut episode. But this is 102, and we haven't figured out, you know, how to speak like human beings yet. Was someone wrote in this week and said that a couple weeks ago I said something 50 times. You remember what it was? On my Seinfeld podcast.
I think it was maybe.
Yeah, I mean. I said I mean 49 times he counted in one episode.
Wait, was that of this or the Seinfeld podcast?
No, that was Seinfeld.
Oh, okay.
Or just in life if someone was, you know, tracking you Black Mirror style through your webcam or something.
I did notice. I just was trying. We had some tech problems, and I was like, this webcam is, has been given like an allowance for, and it said like, you know, the recording software the program we use, and like Skype, And then it was like warbyparker.com. Like, what? Why are they using my webcam? What's going on here? My microphone.
You don't have, tape over your webcam? like Mark Zuckerberg and everyone else?
My wife does on all of her webcams. Yeah.
My feeling is if anybody wants to hack into my camera and look at me like sitting in front of my computer shirtless, like, go ahead. Mm. I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
It's your funeral.
Yeah.
But yeah, but you really are a member of the wave then if you're sitting there shirtless at any point in time during your day.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. So let's just. So actually, now that we've mentioned the wave several times, thumbs up or thumbs down on the wave, Mike?
Big thumbs down. I'm probably going to, you know, sort of roll this into my general statements about Roast Battle, which is there is a lot of chaff on the weak stock that is Roast Battle, where for a 2-minute battle, you're going to get at least 10 minutes of comments and wave shenanigans. I think it's funny if you think about them as sort of like a take on the bleh, bleh, bleh of it all, like the, you know, the overblown aspects that can come sometimes with battles outside of roasting. But they're doing what, like 2 to 3 things every battle? If you do 4 battles per episode, that really adds up. And very rarely are they that funny or that relevant to what they're talking about.
Yes, yeah, it's almost a surprise when a coincidence when they are relevant. But the truth is, Mike, I don't know if you're like a singing competition show, but you can make the same case there that it's a lot of dressing. Like, there's, you know, you could have like, oh, it's the final 6 of some singing show, and you get, you know, 6 songs, each script down to like 80 seconds each. So there's 7 minutes of singing on a 1-hour show.
Oh, yeah. You can completely equate this argument with any sort of singing show or any sort of talent competition show out there. I feel like that is a lingering issue that because networks want to, you know, languish things and really buy up that hour to 2-hour airtime. They do interviews, and we'll talk about, I'm sure, about the star-studded panels that talk for minutes upon minutes at a time. It's something that a bone that I have to pick with all talent competitions, not just Roast Battle.
Well, Mike, would you acknowledge this, even if you don't appreciate the type of humor that the Wave is doing? It's impressive what they're doing, given the fact, you know, again, they use no words, and just with props, they set up these tableaus, which are at least impressive, even if it's not your cup of tea. Or do you reject that premise?
No, I mean, I guess I admire the production quality of it, especially in season 2. And I guess I sort of respect what they're doing. And it's interesting that these guys are, I don't know if they're paid at this point. It seems from what Ross is saying, they seem to just be big fans that just sort of followed them to Montreal for the first season, but decided to hang out in LA for the second season. But I think it's just the amount of things that they do and the miss to hit ratio being so large makes it just leave a general sour taste in my mouth overall.
All right, let's take a quick step back just in case somebody's listening to this podcast but doesn't know what
they probably don't even know what the Wave is. Yeah.
Roast Battle is a show that Jeff Ross started. Akiva and I mentioned it a couple weeks ago. Last year at the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal, it was 4 nights in a row. He set up a 16-person bracket to see who would, and each one would go one-on-one roasting each other while other celebrity comedians were the judges. And the eventual winner was Mike Lawrence, this comedian who, I mean, I never heard of before that, but was very, very good. So he decided to do it again this year. First, he had what he called the regionals, which was smaller roast battles. But as Mike already pointed out, there was no correlation between winning in the regionals and going to the finals. They made a bracket of 16, which was basically 3 bigger names, being Kurt Metzger, Todd Barry, and Jessica Curson, and then 13 people who we had seen a little bit of.
Jessica Curson is not a big name.
Well, but she wasn't in the regionals, and I had heard of her before. So,
oh, okay. No, you hadn't.
Well, whatever. Yeah, she was the only one my wife had heard of going in, her and Todd Barry. My wife hadn't heard of, my wife didn't know any of the judges were, but she knew Jessica Curson.
No shit.
How had Jen heard of her? Jen is like, doesn't know anything about anything. And she was,
it's just like, I don't know. She thinks all white people look the same, she told me.
Anyway. Does she know of Ken Jeong, considering that she's a doctor as well?
Yeah, all doctors know each other. They're probably in the same, like complaining doctor parents group or something.
This is what's really weird to me. That, yeah, I don't know if Ken Jeong's in PMG. There's a joke for all our female doctor listeners. Jen, when she saw Ken Jeong as the judge on that episode, she's like, what is he doing there? He's not a comedian, he's a doctor. And I'm like, how could you know that he's a doctor and not, like, you can know both. But you can't know the doctor part and not the comedian part. That's not possible.
That's weird.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
I'm like, he's been in movies and TV shows. She's like what? I'm like...
The Hangover, where you know him from?
He's much more of a comedian than he is a doctor. It's strange that he would be recognized for his medical work above any sort of...
Did they go to medical school together, maybe?
It was annoying to me how much he was playing up his doctorhood in that episode, actually. you know, like,
I feel like he's
not a practicing physician, is he?
Well, he still is. I mean, based on podcast interviews I've heard with him, he still is, actually. But,
I mean, he films like a 22-episode sitcom every year, no?
I don't know if he actively is right now, but there has been an overlap between his medical practice and his actor career.
Yeah, I'm not buying. Anyway, we're spending too much time on Kendall.
Anyway, so the point is, so they came back, they picked a final bracket of 16 again, and it was on TV.
Well, you had a good point for our sports fan listeners, which was like, the regionals were conference championship games. Like, it could get you noticed, but, you know, doing well in it didn't necessarily correlate to making it.
It was like the conference tournaments, and this is the NCAA, by which we mean that you could lose in the quote-unquote regionals, and it had no consequence to whether or not you showed up in the final bracket. The final bracket did not have seeding. There was sort of the two bigger names, I guess, would be Kurt Metzger and Todd Barra, and the opposite sides that they could meet in the championship if it were to be preordained that way. Anyway, so Thursday night we saw the left half of the battle, 8 people battle each other. Friday night we saw the right half, the other 8 people battle. Saturday night we saw the Elite Eight, as all 8 of those people who advanced on Thursday and Friday face off. And then Sunday night we saw the Final Four as they played each other. And then immediately thereafter, live, the Final Two played each other.
Right, yeah, Sunday night was live. The other ones were probably taped a week or two before that. They also kept the whole, like, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They kept saying, like, tune in Sunday night for the finals, and never acknowledging, like, oh, yeah, we have the semifinals also on Sunday night.
My wife was annoyed because she thought, and she's probably right, given the fact that they're having this live, why didn't they have listeners be involved in the voting process?
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean,
I know what the answer is, but I'm, you know.
Yeah, well, right. The answer is because they weren't inside the winner.
Yeah.
But, I mean, any listener would have been better than completely blitzed out of his mind T.J. Miller picking a winner.
We'll get tonight for you. But I said to Akiva earlier in the four-night run, I said this really feels – and I obviously am not – Mike, are you a guy who watches wrestling?
I am not, no.
So I'm decidedly not. But I thought that this sort of appealed to what I assume is the most appealing parts of WWE, and I like the entrances, especially guys like Alex Hooper, sort of the dramatic way they come out with the costumes and the music, and I like sort of the bravado of the characters against each other, and apparently, much like WWE, it's scripted because, not completely scripted for sure, but it's certainly the case that some judges were told what to do. Usually, for example, there was drama going into the third judge. It was very rarely a sweep of the judges, even in a couple cases where there should have been.
Yeah, they bring it to Jeff Ross, who's the showrunner, more often than not.
Yeah,
for him to make
decisions. Yeah, he's the deciding judge. So again, I want to apologize. My notes are I had so many notes, and especially on the first couple of nights, and we're a little bit light on that. But we'll start with night one.
It started with Frank Castillo versus Jay Light, their best friends.
The would be winner.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah, spoiler.
No, wait. You're saying that people are watching this along and saying, I'm going to pause
No, I think we're the only 3 people on Earth who watch this show, so we're spoiling for everyone else who's going to listen to the podcast.
I'll say this. I said on last week's podcast that if I was doing my top TV shows of 2016, Game of Thrones number one, obviously, I had the season one of Roast Battle number two. I thought this season overall was not as strong as last season. I thought the one in Montreal was better.
The production value was just as good, just the comedians weren't as good.
Yeah.
They went backwards in terms of comedians. Yeah. Like, last time they had a bunch of names, and this time...
I don't know, but last time they had people I never heard of, but they were really good, like Mike Lawrence, for example.
Yeah.
All right.
So... Yeah, well, a lot of the comedians in the... I messaged Mike on day one or two. Frank Castillo, who we just mentioned, had, like, 500 followers on Twitter. Anna Valenzuela had, you know, still has, like, 600 followers on Twitter. You know, they have some really no-name comics.
Yeah.
A lot of them are not professional comedians. Like, a lot of them have other jobs.
Well, that doesn't mean you're not a professional comedian. That just means that you're a struggling comedian and you need to put, you know, have another way to put food on your...
Oh, Chester, just Google the word professional and it'll help you figure it out. Like,
what you mean is they're not full-time comedians.
Yeah, that's what a professional comedian is. You don't need to work at Target.
So there was no such thing as a professional football player until the 1980s? Because in the 70s, they all had jobs in the off-season.
No, you can have a side hustle, but if your main gig, what's paying the bills? The NFL is paying the bills, and that Mike at my back.
So again, I need to apologize for losing my notes because I had written down every single joke that everybody said, and I had a ranking for it and everything. So I don't remember anything that Jay Light and Frank Castillo said to each other. I remember Jay Light being slightly better, but not having a strong opinion about who should have advanced here. What did you guys
think? Yeah, it was very weak. There was no home runs, I think, in this battle.
The one thing they kept replaying over and over again during this battle was the Frank Castillo saying, like, Jay, why are your lips so big? Aren't they tired from shushing black people all the time? That's the one joke I remember.
Yeah. I think, and that's not really that funny, honestly.
Yeah, it was a 50-50 battle. Either one of them could have won easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what was the next battle we saw after Frank?
Well, you should say who the judges night one, in addition to Jeffrey Ross, were.
Okay. So my wife did not watch night one with me, but she watched the other nights. And my wife obviously, you know, has never heard of Anthony Jeselnik. So the judges on night one were Anthony Jeselnik and Snoop Dogg. And Jeselnik is far and away the best judge. He should be the universal judge.
Yep.
I mean, he should run this whole
thing. He should be the host of the show, yes.
So in the beginning of night two, which is Whitney Cummings and Ken Jeong, who are terrible, we'll get to them, they sort of showed clips of Snoop Dogg and Anthony Jeselnik from the night before. And my wife is watching. She's like, oh, man, that sucks. We missed the good judge last night. I'm like, yeah, I know. Jeselnik's really good. She's like, who? No, I'm talking about Snoop Dogg. I'm like,
by the way, Snoop Dogg was better than both of them. Oh, he was.
But I said to Jen, I'm like, yeah. Snoop Dogg's not a comedian. Jen's like, yeah, but people have heard of him.
Well, it's also like, I think that the roast is tie, though, is something that ties back. Like, when Akiva and I covered the Justin Bieber roast on post show recaps, and Snoop Dogg showed up, and he was, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Akiva, I think he was fine, so I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, he didn't bomb. He definitely didn't bring him in.
I think he's better than, like, when they bust in, like, Meta World Peace for the regionals.
Situation.
But it's also a little different, because when Snoop Dogg is on an actual roast, he has comedy writers helping him prepare what he's going to say.
Yes.
Whereas when he's a judge...
Well, this show has writers, too.
Yeah, but not for the judges so much.
I'm sure they...
They
probably feed him a few lines, you're right, yeah.
They could probably feed them a couple lines, but... Yeah. Right. Snoop might not remember them.
So yeah, so Jeselnik was a great judge. He had complete disdain for the contestants, for the for the whole
destroyed the wave. Destroyed the wave.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think I covered Last Comic Standing for the last two seasons with Rob on Rob Has a Podcast, and Jeselnik was the host for that last season. We were both very complimentary of him. I feel like this is, you know, it's Jeff Ross's baby, but, you know, if Jeselnik wants to be the adopted parent next season, I could totally see it, because I totally agree. This is Jeselnik's comedy. Like, really outrageous insult, dry comedy is Jeselnik's wheelhouse. So, no surprise that he was far and away the best judge to evaluate this content.
He was mean, but he also, like, you know, he was one of the only people who, like, picked the correct winner every time.
Do you guys remember in the regionals, there was the guy in the New York regional who did a Jeselnik impression, which was completely spot on, creepily so?
Yeah, who did that? Who did that? Was that Broussard?
No, it was not Broussard.
I don't know.
It was an amazing impression.
It was the guy from Connecticut.
Right.
He didn't make it on.
Yeah, he played Yamanika in the regionals. He was the one who I think was from the town, Newtown, Connecticut.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It was an amazing Jeselnik impression.
Yeah, it sounded, and I wish Jeselnik had been the judge there. By the way, in the New York regionals, they had way better judges than they had in the actual.
Except for Lisa Lampanelli, who I lampooned to Akiva. Like, she was far away, even considering the people we're about to talk about with the judging panel. She was the worst, in my opinion, considering she didn't care who anyone's name was and what they said. She was just giving such blanket statements that she was horrible, in my opinion.
When my first year in college, I was such a fan of Lisa Lampanelli that I went to the Comedy Cellar nights in a row to watch her every single night.
No way.
But the problem is...
That's like the serial killerist thing you've ever said on this podcast,
Well,
Chester.
The problem was...
You know she has the same material every night,
right?
Yeah,
that's the problem, exactly. That it's like, and the way it got really awkward is like on night three, she's like looking for the black person in the audience to make her black jokes, and there was no black person in the audience, so she just picked some random white guy and said, okay, you're going to be my black guy. And then I realized, like, oh, this is all she has. And a little disappointing. But
Chester's annoyed that Lisa Lampanelli doesn't do a new hour every night.
We can't all be a Louis C.K., Chester.
First of all, it's not an hour. At the Comedy Cellar, she's getting up there for 15 minutes.
Yeah,
no, and I'm just saying, if you're trying to make a racist joke about a black person, this whole black person in the audience, move on. You know, the main reason we were going every night is because my friend Rafi, would go out of his way to wear a yarmulke as prominently on his forehead as possible, desperately hoping that they would point to him and make fun of him as a Jew. And considering that,
I would wear a hat to these shows. But I would always do you remember the Make Seven Up Yours guy? He's at the Cellar a lot.
Yeah,
He picked on me like,
isn't it Joffrey?
Yeah. Godfrey.
Godfrey.
He's on Louis or sometimes. Yeah. He's picked on me like three different times. Yeah. One time he was like kind of bombing and I was looking at my phone or something. Ooh. And he was like trying to get my attention, but he was just really being boring. And he was like the 11th comic of the night. Anyway, let's go to the second battle. It was Evan Williams versus Anna Valenzuela. Yeah.
Valenzuela has been a comedian for about 10 minutes, apparently.
Yeah, 2 years, I think they said. Evan Williams mumbled all of his jokes. He was the worst person in the whole competition.
Oh, I disagree. I thought he should have won this battle.
You couldn't even hear his jokes. He was literally mumbling them and not even trying.
All right, Mike, you're the third judge. Who should have won this battle?
No, I I'm going to give it to Anna on this one in terms of being better, but only slightly. It's definitely damning with faint praise here. She was, again, second match in a row where you're starting to get that feeling of like, oh, there's not really many heavy hitters. I would say overall, I liked night two much better than night one.
Oh,
that
side
of the
question.
Bracket was by far the better.
Agreed.
Side.
Do you know what they did also in every joke? It was like one of these things where like they had a bunch of dead parents and dead relatives and like horrible family situations. But it wasn't explained, so like you just found out at the punchline of the joke. It was like, you know, oh, she you like tripped over her dead cousin, you know, and then it's like, oh, I didn't know she did that. And Jesselnik had a great line. It was like, don't do that. That's inside baseball. These people don't even know who you are, let alone your family.
Yeah. But then again, the alternative is what they would do in the regionals, where Moses would introduce them and say, coming up to the stage now, his mother died of cancer and his brother is currently in prison.
Right,
which is
you're,
like,
you're stepping on the joke.
Introduce somebody.
Bit.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but it's still better than what they did.
Can we talk about Moses for a second? He brings absolutely nothing. He doesn't take anything away from the table, but he adds nothing. Why is he
it's very clear that, like, this was his idea to begin with. So you can only assume that he was sort of grandfathered in that it wouldn't function without him. But, like, yeah, you could replace him with basically, you could replace him with a regulation ref from the NFL, and it would be the exact same impact.
Right. Listen, he hosts at the, you know, the comedy store, whichever LA comedy club they do this at. That's not exactly like a high prom, you know, like a prominent gig.
Yeah.
When he does it not on TV, but the fact that he sort of like does it when the cameras aren't rolling means he got the gig. He's not bad. He would lose in the first round of this competition. He also has like 1,000 followers on Twitter.
But I think he's an executive producer on the show. So yeah, my theory was that he's the one who had come up to Jeff Ross and said, "Why don't we do this?" And Akiva,
probably right. Probably right.
All right. So the third battle was that Joe Dosh against Leah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kaya Janine. Okay, so Joe Dosh to me was far and away the best one on night one. Immediately, I thought this guy has to go to the finals from the left half of the bracket. He destroyed Leia 4-0.
Yeah, destroyed. Biggest blowout of the whole tournament. Yeah.
Unbelievable. I thought he was really, really good. I like
Leia didn't get into it.
I like his whole
really.
Persona. And Leia, by the way, coming into this battle, I thought, oh, these are two powerhouses, because in the regionals, I had liked both of them. But yeah, she just got rolled over here.
The one thing about Joe, for me, that really was something that stuck in my head and is going to happen in the other, you know, three battles he has, is TJ Miller, as sauce as he was, correctly pointed out in the finals, he has this weird thing where immediately after he tells a joke, he does this sort of shrug gesture to the audience. And it's sort of funny the first couple times. When he does it every single time for four jokes for three battles in a row, it gets really old to me.
Yeah,
so I thought he was a good comedian, but like so sticky with that gesture.
Yeah, you need a second.
Yeah, it was like he was too cool for it. Yeah.
And then we got to the final of the night, which was Kurt Metzger, the biggest name, against Yamanika Saunders. Yamanika, by the way, the way she came out dressed in all her battles, very, very impressive. You have to respect her outfit.
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah. You know, Chris Rock, and a white person should never do any Chris Rock comedy, obviously. But, you know, Chris Rock has that famous bit about, like, a 300-pound black girl versus a 300-pound white girl. Do you guys know what I'm talking
about? This is very, like, Michael Scott territory.
We're both so nervous for you, but not more excited than nervous for you.
Anyways, the point is, I will paraphrase, but he says that, you know, very obese white women are sitting at home being depressed, and very obese black women are having the time of their lives and are out partying. I'm sure that's a stereotype that may or may not be accurate, but Yamanika Saunders obviously represents a perfect encapsulation of that stereotype, because she is having a great time. And it's hard not to have fun when you're watching her. And Kurt Metzger, as I was saying,
she's very likable.
Yeah. And Kurt Metzger, he is very unlikable. He was a writer for Amy Schumer, and he got into a spot of trouble. Mike, do you want to tell us why?
Yeah, so as a member of the New York comedy community, this is something that hits a little close to home, literally. There was an incident last year where a member of the community was accused of multiple incidents of sexual assault. As a result, they were immediately banned from the theater and essentially ostracized from the community in general. Kurt Metzger was one of the people to speak out adamantly in favor of him. As a result, he was lambasted.
That's a hill you want to die on, usually.
Yeah, exactly. So he was fired from Inside Amy Schumer.
He wasn't fired because the show doesn't exist right now. And I think I honestly think she's waiting for it to like go 2 years and then people not to notice. But I think like he may be back when the show's back.
But I guess this is sort of comparable to the Steve Renazzisi appearance in season one, in that it seems like Comedy Central with both these seasons wanted to give one spot to one of the most controversial comedians at that time to basically have them flounder and everyone to point and laugh at them for extended.
Yeah, that's what he said. So you didn't. We should have told you to maybe listen to Jeff Ross on Bill Simmons' podcast. Because he said that exact same thing, basically, to Simmons a few weeks ago.
Well, that's what Akiva said, but I didn't really feel like Metzger, while some people were upset with him, he hasn't been ostracized from the community the way that, you know, Steve Ranazzisi was. You know,
Ranazzisi is just a bigger name because he was a star of a popular show, where Metzger's a writer.
Okay, but there's Daniel Tosh does the same thing as Metzger. There's a lot of comedians who are sort of openly, you know, pro-rape mm-hmm. jokes or whatever you want to call it,
right.
You know, that, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
anyway, so Jeff does him a favor. They specifically put him up against Yamanika. They appeared to be friends. This battle was a giant mess. One of the problems this year, they need to have somebody like literally like pointing at whose joke it is. Because one of the weird things they do, you each get four jokes, right? You know, Chester says like his joke against me. And then I say like, you know, Alex Chester has all the likability of, you know, blah, 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 blah. I make a joke. And then it's like sometimes that's your joke, and sometimes like you get to insult the person on the rebound and then tell your joke. But it's not clear when. But in this battle, Metzger had clearly never seen the show before. So he told like six jokes and Yamanika told about two. Because he like kept interrupting her to the point where even though he told like 8,000 jokes, after the battle was over, he like just sat there like an idiot and told one more joke.
Yeah.
Stealing her turn. Like he should have lost just because he didn't follow the rules at all. This whole thing was a huge mess.
Well, I mean,
he definitely had the best
joke.
This isn't
a golf tournament. Like you don't have to be like that strict in your enforcement of the rules.
I know, but you shouldn't be allowed to play like that hardcore of defense. Yeah. He also had the best joke of the night, I think, which the turbulence joke.
Remind us.
She flew over with her sister Turbulence.
Oh yeah.
With Turbulence. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that he was a little better than her, but again, like the first two matchups of the night, I thought you could have gone either way. I didn't have a strong opinion.
Yamanika is going to be by far the audience favorite. Say what you want about actual joke structure, but both of the matches she's in, the audience hoots and hollers and stands up for literally everything that she does.
She is a presence. She is a stage presence for sure.
Yeah, but again, my feeling at the end of this night was the only comedian who I really enjoyed was Joe Dosh, and I was going to be annoyed if he wasn't going to advance to the finals.
Okay, so let's go to night two.
What did you guys feel as your like takeaway from night one? Biggest winners, Joe Dosh and Anthony Jeselnik to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. But
I like
Dominika
too. Like she's the only person who could like actually move her career out of this, besides maybe the winner.
And I would also say that you know I think you know seeing Todd Barry go up the next night, I think my expectations were planted more firmly in night two, and I was not disappointed in that regard. Much stronger than night one.
Yeah. By the way, like. 12 of these 16 comics at least have podcasts that nobody listens to.
But every comedian in the world has podcasts nobody listens to.
It's crazy. Like, if you go to, like, D, you know, minus list comedians, they all have some podcasts on iTunes with, like, 8 iTunes reviews.
I mean, we're not exactly ones to talk, but...
I know. Listen, we're not comedians. We got more than that.
By the way, Akiva, you mentioned, you know, like, the winner sort of getting something out of their career from this. I haven't really heard of Mike Lawrence before or since, frankly, except when he was a judge in the New York Regionals. He was good. But I was disappointed that he wasn't in the bracket. Like, shouldn't he be returned to defend his crown like you do with, like, the Slam Dunk tournament?
Well, I think Ross thinks that the winner should... Well, also, they clearly didn't have a plan because Sarah Tiana... told Bill Simmons that she was going to be on the show. She claimed that she was going to be in the bracket. Sarah Tiana was the runner-up last year. No, Mike Lawrence got a job to write for Amy Schumer, I think. He got a bunch of gigs. What does that mean you haven't heard of him? Like, he didn't become Louis C.K. from winning Comedy Central's roast battle last year? Like,
I'm not dead, though. Like, I've heard of, like, 99... Like, again, like, I'm not talking about... Like,
instead of playing, like, a tiny set, he might go to, like, you know, Cleveland and play a bigger club. Like, it definitely helped him.
But it's just the fact that he didn't come back was weird. The fact that Sarah Tiana didn't come back was weird.
Wait, he wasn't even there, right? He was only on the regionals. Yeah. Matthew, that is true.
Matthew Broussard, in season one in Montreal last season, they made reference to the previous... They implied that there had been a like a roast battle before that wasn't on TV?
I think it's a recurring thing. I mean, Jimmy Carr, who was on the first season, I think they said that he had won the previous year. So I think it's just they didn't build an entire arena and broadcast it. But I'm pretty sure it's something that they have always done. It just was not a big to-do until last year.
And now there's like leagues in New York and L.A. you can see, because Zach Amico, who faces Matt Broussard on night two, has done like 50 battles, and you could see a lot of them on YouTube.
Broussard, by the way, because they referenced in season one, he had been the runner-up in the pre-season one battle.
This is his third straight.
Yeah.
Well, I guess this is a good segue. To talk about his.
He's the Jinho of the.
By the way, you mentioned Jimmy Carr. He is a huge comedian in England. Like, I've watched on Netflix his stand-up specials.
Yeah, well, that's the difference between season one and season two. Like, Jimmy Carr is just like another guy in season one. He would have won this competition. Well, easily.
Earl Skakel, the guy who finished third, I believe there's that Showtime show coming up this summer about comedy called I'm Dying Up Here, and I believe Earl Skakel actually has a pretty big part in it, too.
Yeah, although, but he was also sort of like the Cinderella story of season one. Like, they were surprised that he won anything. He was sort of just like a wacky guy.
Let's go to night two.
Keith Carey versus Olivia Grace.
Yeah, Olivia Grace is like 21 years old. She had broken her leg or something in between night one and
last
night
year.
Two
she like slipped on the stage and lacerated her leg open. So she was the one last year who did it in a wheelchair. And I think she still lost. So she's coming back with revenge in mind.
Yeah, but she was playing somebody.
She somehow looks much younger this year.
Yeah, she was playing somebody really good. She should have lost.
Last year, Keith Carey, I believe he is the one who beat Anna Valenzuela in the regionals. You know, he was pretty decent. Olivia Grace has an interesting look. I actually think she has like a real chance to be a good
interesting looks. Keith Carey, who, by the way, Moses did do that thing where he introduces him. He introduced him as like a bisexual something or other.
That was a big thing in his preliminary roast.
He sort of roly-poly, but...
Yeah, just a little roly-poly. Yeah. Maybe bigger boobs than the average guy. There was a Down syndrome joke that was very mean but not original in this one. They got a little more, but it was probably more mean-spirited, the Roast Battle 2 than Roast Battle 1. There was a 40 Acres joke that was pretty good in this one, but nothing really memorable. Who do you think should have won this one?
I liked Keith more from the regionals, but I guess Olivia proved herself a little more, and if Olivia came back and she proved herself, let's push her forward over Keith.
Yeah, pretty similar to night one. They sort of had the weakest battle go up first.
All right, so what was the next battle then?
It was Todd Barry versus Jessica Curzon.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, Todd Barry, the biggest name in the tournament. Last year, and Jeff Ross did mention this to Bill Simmons, Ralphie May, a pretty big comedian, I guess literally also, and a friend of Jeff Ross's, comes on the show, and he sort of assumed because he's a bigger name that he's going to advance all the way. And he didn't really deserve to win in the first round, but he won anyways. He definitely did not deserve to win in the second round, and he lost. And he was genuinely pissed at Jeff Ross, so much so that he has not spoken to Jeff Ross since.
Yeah, and they were like best friends before that.
Yeah, so Todd Barry's a pretty big comedian. You know, like, he's a guy who, I think he's probably the only guy in this tournament who I've heard live, but, you know, I heard him live like 15 years ago, so he's had a long career.
Todd Barry has like 60,000 Twitter followers. Maybe one other person has double digits. Maybe Broussard has double digits.
But this is the tough part of like bussing in these people between like Todd Barry and Ralphie May, is because unlike other types of, you know, talent competitions, comedy is very much about who you know. It's very much about networking and forming like an inner lining of people to all constantly go to and talk to. So I feel like when you bring in these people, Ralphie May is kind of acting like a baby and not talking to Jeff Ross since, and kind of being humiliated on reality television for the second time, considering he lost on Last Comic Standing as well. But at the same time, you know, he might feel that, you know, Jeff Ross was kind of playing with his friendship in the spirit of making a good TV show. So that's why it's always tough to like bring your friends on, because you know they're going to assume like, okay, they're just going to advance me in the competition. And when they don't, you have a right to get pissed off about it.
Sarah Silverman literally voted for him in round three because they're friends.
Yeah. By the way, Kiva, I'm going to fact check you. First of all, Jessica Curzon has 40,000 Twitter followers and a blue check mark.
I didn't check her.
Todd Barry has 300,000, not 60,000.
Todd Barry's 300,000?
Yeah, so he...
Wow,
yeah.
That's really good.
He is, I completely agree, he is by far the biggest name coming into this.
Yeah,
I'm very surprised.
Names, which is why
okay, fine, I take it back. Curson.
But it's weird why they were battling each other for that reason.
No, because I imagine that they wanted Curson to beat Barry, and that like sets her up, that like builds her. That's like you beat The Undertaker, and now you're Brock Lesnar.
But again, no, there was no chance of Barry losing. You're wrong. That's the whole point of the Ralphie Mae story. There was zero chance of Todd Barry losing in the first round, and probably the second.
No, because I'm not sure Barry even wanted to be there.
The battle itself was by far the best out of the both first round nights, and it was savage.
One thing that happens for people who were just listening to us and didn't watch a show, in which case this is probably unlistenable, but one thing that, especially since Chester forgot to put in the jokes, one thing that happens is like, if you have four, and this is how the guy who won, if you have four B-plus jokes, and the other person, maybe they have an A and A minus, and then they have a C, and then like, if you have a joke where you stumble on it or it just dies, that's what the judges remember. Unless you have like an absolute home run, that's what happens. So Jessica Curson had good jokes, and then she tried to tell Louis C.K. joke, and she just ate it. She just totally stumbled on it, and she lost because of that, for sure.
I actually laughed hardest in this battle when Jessica Curson had her opening joke about Todd Barry being ugly and unattractive, and his response was, "That's fair."
It was very good response.
And that's when I knew it was wrapped up. And I think even Whitney Cummings has a moment of actual good judging and says that as well, that like, you're the only person up here who actually acknowledges the insult. And that's so different and so new that you have to reward it.
Yeah. So with the judges night two, you didn't say were Whitney Cummings and who?
Ken Jeong.
Ken Jeong.
Was the other one? Ken Jeong. Ken Jeong was just unmemorable. He didn't do anything right or wrong.
Whitney Cummings, worst judge of the tournament by far.
So bad. I mean, Whitney, literally these like amateur comedians are zinging her, and she didn't get any returns back. Like, if you said the jokes to Whitney Cummings, if you said those jokes to Anthony Jeselnik, you would literally be in a body bag. Like, he would own you, and your career would be over. Cummings, like, literally didn't have any... She had nothing to say.
Well, my issue with her wasn't her lack of funniness. My issue, by the way, I went to college with her. I mean, not like, you know, we weren't like friends, but we were at the college at the same time. She's a very good roaster. You know, she's been on roasts historically, and she's done very well on them. But here, she was so openly, like, her judging was terrible. Like, she would choose people for the wrong reasons. She, every single time she judged, she sort of personalized. She says, well, as a woman, my feeling is blank. And, like, you should make jokes about that, but you shouldn't be, like, judging based on that reason. She's openly saying, I'm voting for my friends. I'm voting for people because of their gender. I thought, like, as a judge, she was terrible. Forget about whether or not she was funny as a comedian.
I just get this impression of Whitney Cummings in general that she sort of just feels she's above it all. And I don't know what it is. It might be this competition. It might be NBC for canceling her show. She just always has this air about her of like, why am I here? I could be doing much better things. And I feel like this instance was no different.
And what's weird, it's funny because Natasha Leggero was she on night three, I think?
She was on night four.
She was night four.
And they're sort of similar, but Leggero's like has like this faux fanciness, whereas Whitney Cummings, like every joke about her is that she sleeps with every producer in Hollywood, but so much so that like there has to be a story behind this.
That's like the easy joke for every female comedian.
I know, but that's like her, like she sort of like propagates this. That's like her thing.
Like the same way there was one match later in the tournament, and again, because I lost my notes, I don't remember, where all four jokes, I think it was Joe Dosh against Frank Castillo. All four jokes about Joe were like not funny at all to me because all four jokes were he's a homosexual, like he has sex with men. Okay, but that's if you can't make the same joke about a straight person but in reverse, then it's like there was no joke there. It was just acknowledging a fact about him, I thought. And so it's sort of the same. Like if you're just gonna say, oh, she's a woman and so she's a slut, like there has to be something extra there. It has to be like you have to have a joke beyond just sort of like the easy like throwaway line, basically. And yeah, I felt like that was definitely missing. So what was the next match? Chaplin against Hooper?
Yeah, Scott Chaplin, Alex Hooper, pretty solid battle between two guys who were pretty good.
Oh, disagree.
What?
This was a rout. This Hooper destroyed Chaplin.
I think Chaplin's good. Hooper definitely won, but I think Chaplin could have beat some of the other people.
So Chaplin did the worst thing in a roast, which is he personalized. He was like personally offended, and he was like his feelings were hurt by some of the things that Hooper said.
Yeah.
Which you're automatically disqualified if you react that way.
Hooper comes out with like a really wild coat, which I think buys you a round in this tournament sometimes. In like a tie, if you have like funny, Hooper also tells like 45-second jokes. There's really no rules. Like you could tell like an 8-word joke, which is what Frank Castillo does every joke, or you could like Hooper does like 3 jokes in 1 a lot of times.
Yeah, those can backfire, but Hooper was really funny.
Yeah, Hooper's good. He's solid.
By the way, back to just
for now.
Back to the thing about being personally insulted. So, you know, like, why do we watch the NFL? We watch the NFL because these are like superhumans. These are people who put their bodies on the line and destroy themselves physically in a way that normal people couldn't. And we enjoy watching that, like gladiators, you know, because and roast battle's the same thing, but emotionally. We watch, these are superhumans who can get on stage and the most, like, things that people would be most sensitive about can be destroyed. They're destroyed emotionally, and they can survive it in a way that normal people can't. And so when you see somebody get up there and act like their feelings are legitimately hurt, again, it's like, it'd be like watching, like, a regular guy in the NFL and then all his bones are broken. Like, what are you doing there? Like, you're wasting your time. It, like, it didn't matter to me whether Scott's jokes were funny. His reaction to Hooper's jokes made me feel like he shouldn't have been in the tournament at all. And he also he also acted that way in the regionals, by the way.
Yeah. Anyway, so Hooper wins that one. And the last battle of the night, which is, you know, if Barry's going second, they really had high hopes for this one. Zach Amico, I think Jeff Ross had brought up on the Simmons podcast as maybe the tournament favorite. Definitely the, like, the roaster with the most experience, basically, of anyone in the world. Like, this is what he does. But he came out against Broussard, who had been this before. And it was like throwing him to the wolves, right? Because, he came out with the ridiculous hair.
Yeah.
And he didn't really hit a single joke. Like, this is a guy who is so dominant, and he didn't really have one, like, you know, home run joke at all.
Well, Broussard, I thought was terrible.
Yeah, surprising off night
for Amico.
You thought Broussard was bad here?
No, in season one, Broussard was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Broussard had a joke. I think Amico's mom works in Olive Garden, and he compared it to, like, his mom had Parkinson's,
but
and he
Broussard's
said, like, I'd
jokes
rather.
Are really smart, though, honestly. He has really.
Oh, They're so good.
Yeah, but Broussard's been on Conan, and he has, like, he tells a lot of science jokes also. Like, he's a smart
guy. His family is full of scientists, as we find out from that random getting to know interview that he's had out of the finals. Was it the Amico matchup that he makes the joke about, like, I don't know, if being a deplorable gives you character,
that
then Amico is like a strong Gmail password. That might have been like the joke of the entire season for me.
Yeah.
That was just so good.
That was
so
a thinker.
Good.
By the way, we're talking about how Amico comes out with the ridiculous hair and that's a disadvantage. I disagree. To me, the disadvantage is Broussard. You can't come out and be like a good-looking guy, like white guy. Like,
yeah, but it's hard to make fun. I mean, it's hard to make fun of the bland people, right?
Well, I mean, like if it's Jeselnik, then you make fun of him because he looks like an Aryan, like a Nazi, basically. And
right. When you go to roast and Jeselnik there, he gets Nazi jokes. Broussard could get the same jokes.
Even though he's technically
Jewish. And he gets Jeselnik jokes also. He is Jewish. I'd like to know, I was like looking up a couple of these guys on social media. I'd like to know how he's friends with my cousin, who's a rabbi on Facebook. Like,
who is Broussard?
Maybe they go to the same, synagogue in Houston. Anyway, night three, now the quarterfinals, Matt Dosh versus Yamanika Sanders. The most racist joke of the entire tournament, and maybe the history of comedy.
By the way, can we talk about Jeff Ross? How his shirt and his jacket are both engraved with RMG for Roastmaster General.
That is insane.
Oh, I had another Brian Moses comment I forgot to mention. In night one, Snoop Dogg did that famous epic rap battles in history where it was Santa Claus versus Moses. You guys have seen that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Akiva?
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen that one, Akiva?
I think so. It sounds familiar.
It's very, very good. So Snoop plays Moses.
I read your book. You got a strict religion. No bacon, but mandatory circumcision. I'm a jolly bowl of jelly giving holiday presents. But all the jokes that people ever get for Christmas is jealous.
When I was high upon the mountain, God revealed the truths of the earth, but he never mentioned a fat ass Papa Smurf. It takes 9 reindeers to haul your fat ass. You took the Christ out of Christmas and just added more mass. You need to stop breaking the houses and creeping and peeping on naughty kids while they sleeping, and keep your hands off my stocking. Don't you ho-ho me, I split your ass in half like I did the Red Sea. You ain't a saint, you a slaver like a pharaoh in the snow. Stop with the unpaid labor and let my little people go.
We ain't slaves!
Well, let's say turn your brains to mush!
I think you need to stop smoking and all that burning bush.
Yeah, we're magical workers, man.
We hang with reindeer.
Yo, here's a GPS.
Who gets lost for 40 years?
You're a glorified secretary, so write this down.
We got these nuts.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
So much drama in the Israel BC. It's kind of hard talking directly to the G-O single D. Hand me my chisel, I got a new command missile for y'all. Thou should not let children sit on a grown man's lap at the mall. I beat you 10 times before the bread can rise, you dummy. And walk off into the land of my milk and honey.
And the reason I thought of this is because at one point during night one, when they came back from commercial, Jeff Ross referred to Moses by his name, and Snoop, who was obviously really stoned, all of a sudden like came to us and he's like, Moses? He sort of like looked up. And then somebody sort of said semi-off mic, I guess it must have been Jeselnik, somebody said something like, oh yeah, you love Moses. So I thought there was like a little reference there to, but yeah. So
truly an Easter egg for the Snoop Dogg fans out there.
Yeah, all right, so sorry.
Yeah, so this was Joe Dodge versus Yami. He said Sarah Silverman, and who were the judges for this one?
John Mayer. So it was Sarah and John Mayer.
Yeah. John Mayer, who was pretty decent. He was fine. Yeah. One of the comics roasted him that he slept with Katy Perry, Jessica Simpson, and Britney Spears.
I think Broussard said, I love all your hits. Taylor Swift, Jessica yeah. Simpson,
that's
Katy
some
Perry.
Insult. That's really a big insult to John Mayer.
Yeah, reminder, you sleep with hot women, John Mayer. Yeah,
like,
how dare you?
Literally like four of the five like most eligible women in like the whole country.
So I have my notes from night three. Joe Dosh came out, and I thought this is as big a baller move as you can possibly do in Roast Battle, which is he came out and dropped what is an amazing Roast Battle joke before he even did his four.
What'd he say?
He comes out there, and he says, it's an honor to roast one of my comedy icons, Patrice O'Neill.
Yeah,
that's a good joke.
But he's so confident that he says, I have four better jokes than that.
The pre-roast jokes are usually hit or miss, but that was a definitive hit. And even though, again, Yami was the crowd favorite, she was definitely getting more acclaim, I think, than Joe. I do think Joe had much stronger jokes than her this round.
But I thought, I trucked this one up to Yami. He said that she looks like Sarah Silverback, which is an insanely racist joke that the crowd liked. Yeah.
So it's crazy that you said that, because I thought this was a rout. I thought Dosh won again, 4-0, not even close. But Jed, my wife, thought Yami won, which blew my mind.
I thought Yami won.
But now it says that also. Maybe I'm just not woke. I don't know. I also thought Mayer was a terrible judge. He did the same thing.
You're definitely not woke.
He did the same thing as Cummings and Jong did the night before, which is he was like too serious. He was trying to like analyze the jokes and explain the humor in a very unfunny way, I thought.
But this is also someone like, I can understand it from John Mayer's perspective, because it's very clear that like, okay, people think I'm a musician. I want to try to prove myself. So I can at least say, yes, you're too much of a try-hard John Mayer, but at least it comes from someplace, as opposed to a comedian who says they don't want to be there and as a result isn't really paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah. All right, then we had Olivia Grace against Todd Barry. Sarah Silverman, who obviously, like everybody else, I love, but this is where she disqualified herself as a judge. She said, basically, I'm voting for Todd purely because we're friends.
Yeah, I think either one of them could have won, because this was such a mediocre battle.
Yeah, this was a bad. I would say when it's a bad battle, it's fine with saying that the tie goes to sort of the person with the longer track record. But I didn't like how the vote was decided. I didn't like the way that
said. And I didn't like, for some reason, Todd's last joke did not stand out to me of like, Olivia, give me some good news. You just got cast to play the role of every woman who shoplifts from an Urban Outfitters. Like, that was definitely too much track to put down. I feel like he had better jokes earlier on that I'm probably forgetting about.
Todd Barry basically got worse throughout the tournament with every joke he told.
And also, Olivia, like, the stereotype of her is that she's a redneck who lives in the South, not she's a hipster who goes to Urban Outfitters. Like, you know, I thought it was a confusing. Yeah, then we had.
But she's hard to roast because she doesn't really, like, what's her thing? It's like her hair blocks her face. She's kind of unkempt. Like, it's hard to really have a great joke based on that.
Yeah. Well, it's the things that you make fun of everybody on the show for, which is their weight and their gender. And, I mean, you know.
Right.
And their ethnicity, especially.
Right. Then it's Frank Castillo versus Ana Valenzuela.
By far the weakest of the Elite Eight matchups. It was disappointing that one of
there was a home run joke in here, though.
Which one was that?
Frank Castillo says Ana Valenzuela, like, that she's like a Trump. You look like you're kind of like a Trump. Your face is Ivanka.
Yeah, your body, you have a body like Melania, a brain like Ivanka, and you're barren.
Your womb is barren. Yeah. That's a really great joke.
It's all right.
And also said, that was a smart joke. He just didn't deliver it perfectly.
But I mean, so after this night, Akiva and I were talking of the top four, you know, what's the equity between them? We both had Frank Castillo ranked dead last, because even Ross pointed out here, like, you're going to be up against three performers, and you're not really a performer, but it turns out for him, jokes are going to pull much more than performance style in the final round. Yeah.
Frank Castillo does nothing other than, like, tell 8 to 10 word jokes.
Yeah.
And it also should be pointed out, like, he's literally the doorman across the street at the comedy store.
Okay, but that was the thing that the TV show was very misleading about. Doorman at the comedy store is the first job that every comedian does that. You know?
Yeah, Mark everyone Maron knows
was
that.
The door- well, no. For not everybody. Most people watching Roast Battle didn't know that.
Okay, but people know that. That's like your comics are the doorman.
But you were just saying, oh, he's not even a comic. Like, he is a comic. That's how you get in the game as a comic.
I can guarantee he has another job.
He's the doorman at the Comedy Cellar. I mean, at,
well, okay, fine. Yeah, at the Comedy Factory. I'm saying these guys all have other jobs. So one of them works at like a waitress, and they all have other jobs.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was.
So yeah, he wins.
He was slightly better than I thought, but I didn't really have a strong opinion.
Yeah, and then the last battle,
Hooper versus Broussard.
I thought Hooper should have won, honestly.
I don't know. To me, like, you talk about like Hooper's sort of weird affectations during his first round edged him out, and I agree with that. But like, I think he turned it a little too much to 11 in this time out. And Broussard, again, came out with really solid jokes. And Hooper didn't really have that great jokes and put on, like, the weird foppish persona on top of it. It was just too much for me.
I thought, coming into this battle, I thought Hooper was going to win in a rout because he had blown out Chaplin the night before. I wasn't that impressed from Broussard for 2 years in a row. But I thought, first of all, Broussard really gives his audience the benefit of the joke. This is when he did the Gmail character joke, which was really good. Even his simple jokes, like he made the Richard Simmons joke, that was also great. I thought that...
Yeah,
I thought,
don't feed Richard Simmons after dark.
Yeah, I thought this was a massive upset by Broussard, but I thought he deserved to win.
I agree. I think Broussard by far is the most improved. He's one of the only people... I think him and Yami are the two we've seen from year one to year two, but he's the most improved by far of between the two seasons we've seen on Roast Battle.
Yeah. Mike, that you just referenced, which was sort of, you know, talking... And I also spoke to Akiva after night three. So we're going into the finals. It's going to be Todd Bear against Broussard, and it's going to be Joe Dosh against Frank Castillo. So you said your thinking was Castillo was definitely the last. What was your thinking like among the other three?
I might have been, again, a little slighted because I knew Todd Barry going in, but and I, you know, even though you said he got worse as the tournament progressed, I still liked a lot of his stuff. So I probably put Barry 1, Broussard 2, Dosh 3, Castillo 4.
Oh, wow.
Again, that right side is just completely dominant.
Yeah,
so
I'm
sad
very
to see
different.
My 1 and 2 go up against each other.
Akiva, what's your take?
I thought whoever won the right side was going
to
win.
Okay, so to me, I would have put it at like 70% Dosh, 20% Broussard, 9% Barry, 1% Castillo. To me, Dosh had been by far the best through two nights. Castillo was worthless. And Barry, I knew for sure, was going out because he only got that far based on reputation. So I thought Dosh would destroy Castillo, and then he'd beat Broussard pretty easily as well. So, but apparently...
Well, and also from, like, an objective standpoint, speaking in terms of equity and not who I wanted to see to win, Barry had no chance of winning because you know if he would win, there would be... Again, I don't know how many people ended up watching this show, but there definitely would have been cries among the comedy community of,
Jeff
Ross is asking his friends on and they're winning. Why should we even do these regional things if he's just going to reward his friends at the end of the day?
He couldn't win. I don't even think he wanted to win. It would have been absurd.
Yeah. All right, so we get to night four. We have, instead of a three-judge panel, we have a five-judge panel. We have Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, which is their first mistake of the night.
Yep.
Yeah, well, Patton Oswalt...
Because it's a live show. This is a live show. The first three were not. And
it did go long.
It was just
screwed up
too
people's DVRs, for sure. Patton Oswalt was good. Jason Sudeikis, I've never been a fan of. TJ Miller, I am a fan of, but he was the worst judge of the whole tournament.
I think he was very drunk. He was drinking the whole time.
And Natasha Leggero was sort of her standard self. She was fine.
Yeah, Moshe Kasher is right behind her. Honestly, he's probably more qualified than everyone.
And he was
but
also
Patton.
He was a regional judge.
Yeah, he's a great judge.
Yeah, he did the LA ones.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
All right, so the first battle of the night, we had Joe Dosh versus Frank Castillo. I liked Castillo. I thought he had a good line, his like a baseball line.
Yeah, baseball joke was great. The Cuban baseball joke was great.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird that they highlighted the Joe's forehead is so big because he's thinking about dicks over that one, because I thought the baseball joke was much more creative. I agree with what you said before. I mean, this is basically he's Latino versus he's gay. You really aren't striving for that much nuance.
But the gay jokes weren't even, again, the gay jokes were just like, ha ha, he's gay. And I actually liked the fact that Joe responded basically by saying like, yeah, I enjoy having sex with men. So what? You're a loser. Like, that's why I thought he should have won, because Castillo's jokes were not jokes. They were just, like, pointing out, like, I thought Castillo was terrible. I thought he didn't deserve to get this far, and it was an embarrassment that he was in the finals. Like, you know, I'm looking at my notes at the point I say...
Wait, you thought Dosh should have won this?
Not even close! Could not believe a world I was
Oh, that's
in.
Crazy. Oh, no, it was insane that Dosh got one vote.
What?
He didn't land...
What?
Castillo destroyed Dosh.
Hold on, Mike.
Jeff Ross could not believe that because the first two people voted Castillo, and then Dosh got 3 and 4, and then Ross had to make the decision, and Ross was apoplectic.
Hold on,
he
Mike,
could not
Mike,
believe
Mike,
that it wasn't
Mike,
5-0.
Am I crazy here?
I'm trying to remember. Was the Mexican picked a fruit? Was that what Broussard said in the finals, or did Joe Dosh say that in the semis?
I don't know.
Go back and watch this 5-minute clip. Castillo annihilates Dash.
I had
insane.
0 points for Castillo. All four of his jokes were, Joe has sex with men. That's not a joke. That's an observation. And Joe even called him on that. I thought Joe's final joke was by far the best joke. I'm looking at my notes at the time. I said, can I place my life savings on him getting destroyed in the finals?
Well, you're broke now. But yeah, I guess going back to your question to me, I don't think it was a blowout either way. I honestly thought I don't think Joe brought his best material. I thought he was the favorite going in, but I think Frank Castillo benefited very, very much on going up against two people who ostensibly bombed with their material. So I guess I could understand him winning, but I didn't want him to.
Yeah. All right, so let's get to Broussard to Barry, which was much better. And I have comments on all
But this is really where this the scandal of the whole show comes, because, first of all, Todd Barry's like, Justin Bieber Beatles joke was like the worst joke of the whole tournament.
Well,
it made no sense.
First joke was, you look like a game show host. Like, that's not even an insult.
No, not yet. That's not an insult. Like, that's literally like the lead of SNL plays game shows like 18 times
a
season.
And Matthew's response was, you look like a Make-A-Wish child who forgot to die, which is phenomenal.
That's not bad.
Right off the bat, Matthew has a massive lead. Yeah. Then Barry's second joke, the Beatles Justin Bieber thing, that was made no sense on any level.
No sense.
And then Matthew just doubles down, basically tells him he's going to die alone. I thought Matthew had like already clinched it at this point.
But okay, so if you're watching, I forget the order of the votes, but very clearly, I think when it's 2-0 Todd Barry, Jeff Ross signals to Jason Sudeikis. When someone else is talking, basically like we're voting Broussard. Like, it is beyond fixed at this point. Like, he is clearly telling in the background like who to vote.
But sometimes, and again, we go back to election night. Sometimes things need to be fixed because you can't have people like T.J. Miller deciding.
That's why I'm on record on this podcast as saying like, you know, like a benevolent dictatorship like I run in a pool is good. Like, if you could be trusted, then that's what you need, because Ross should be making these decisions above drunk T.J. Miller and, you know, Jason Sudeikis, for sure.
Yeah, so let's just quickly run through their third and fourth jokes. Barry's third joke basically was that Matthew's corny. And then Matthew had a third great joke, I thought, where he basically called Barry a pretentious pedophile.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I thought he clinched it. And then Barry's last joke was that Broussard is a poor man's Jeselnik, which is not a bad joke. But, again, the problem is, like, the larger audience for the show doesn't necessarily know who Anthony Jeselnik is. He hasn't been on the show for 3 years.
Even though you saw him 3 nights before.
Yeah, but there's a big percentage of people who didn't watch Thursday night who are watching Sunday night.
That's true. Like, they kept hyping up the finals and nothing else.
Yeah, my wife didn't understand that joke at all. And then and Matthew's last joke, I thought, was not as good. He basically, like, usually you want to end on a great one. He basically just said that Todd Barry's, like, peers have passed him by. So I actually thought, like, I graded this 3.5, but I thought that Barry got the last vote. But, yeah, the judges were completely a disgrace.
The judging here was not great. That's why, like, listen, a show like American Idol, maybe they pick who wins behind the scenes. Dancing with the Stars, like, they won't tell you what the voting system is because they want to pick the winner. But at a certain point, like, they know what they're doing. And it's like, we don't want to see the sausage be made right in front of us. They probably, maybe they just shouldn't do a live finale. Like, what are they worried about? Spoilers? Who cares?
No, I mean, I think they could do, like I watch RuPaul's Drag Race, and, like, there's a subjective comment as to who to eliminate there, but it's not like they go down the line and each person says who they want to get rid of. I find it'd be much easier if it's just, like, you give your blanket comments, everyone puts their heads together, and then they get back, the cameras back up, and Jeff Ross says, okay, this person's moving on. That's a lot easier than having each judge give a vote out loud.
Even the order of who votes is always disorganized.
They want to build up the drama.
Yeah, but they don't really do it. A lot of times it's like 2-0, and Ross doesn't even realize that there's already been a winner.
Well, when it was 2-0 here, I actually paused my TV, and I wrote my little note. I said, I know for sure that Jeff Ross is going to make sure that Broussard wins. I just wonder.
Oh, and he literally,
was he going to do it for the right reasons or the wrong reasons? In other words, the right reason is because Broussard was funnier, but the wrong reason is this is a show that needs to create stars for it to have legs, and Broussard is clearly the best chance to create a star, so Broussard has to win. Although, you know, how wrong I was, obviously.
It wasn't clear to me that Todd Barry wants to be there. And now, so Broussard wins, and the final is Frank Castillo versus Broussard. And
the fix was in for Broussard to win.
I mean,
the plan was for Broussard to win.
They had packages. I would be shocked if they even had one of those rolling packages for Todd Barry. Because if you notice, like, everyone else is in the background of all those shots, and he's not.
He left.
Like, they all went for, like, to film probably the day before or something, and he was not there.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is that, like, again, it's the separation between, like, those that are much bigger names versus a lot of these are sort of fledgling comics that hang around together and right. fuck with each other, whereas Todd Barry definitely walked in, did his roast, and then promptly left every night.
Right, exactly.
But let's talk about the final. Broussard comes.
Well, this is the final's over in 10 seconds, right?
Yeah. Yep.
It was a disaster. Again,
very similar to last year's. This is a little more pronounced, but Serratiano, who was probably the best roaster for most of the tournament last year, told the 49ers joke, which was kind of funny, but totally died in the room.
Because it was Canada.
Yeah, which she said, like, it was just too weird of a joke, but it was a totally fine joke. But do you remember the joke was? He literally just couldn't get it out.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's possible this happens on the tape shows and they just edit it better. But he couldn't get it out. And then they're like, say it again. And he starts saying it again. But there's still a lot of noise at that point. So he has to say it a third time. So he just aborts it, says a different, like, very short, not funny joke.
Yeah.
And it's game over at that point. Like, Castillo literally just has to speak words without stumbling and it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder how long that crowd was in that room and how sauce they were, because no matter what, whether it was Broussard's joke or not, they were restless and noisy throughout that entire battle. Yeah. You hear prominent shushing, the last joke is said multiple times to sort of quell the crowd. They were definitely raucous and I think ready to go home at that point.
Yeah, Castillo has one really good joke, right? The One Tree Hill joke, that's where they would like lynch people or something. That was good. And then Broussard had the worst joke of the whole tournament, probably. That ja-ja-ja joke, no?
Well, see, so I...
Oh, yeah.
No, I once dated a girl whose first language was Spanish, so I actually got the joke, which is, like, Spanish people, like, don't say...
This is the longest way for a humble brag ever, Mike. I'm just letting you know.
A humble brag that I dated somebody...
No,
how many girls have you dated?
Every episode there's a new girl before Jen. The thing is, I get the joke as well, but it's not really a joke.
Akiva did not get it. My wife didn't get it either.
Yeah, but I hope you didn't tell her about the Spanish girl dated. She got very
jealous. It's an observation. He was essentially saying, like, hey, the problem is people...
Akiva, that girl's name was also Jen, and I dated her while Jen and I were on a break.
Oh, that's okay, fine. So that's the same girl. You just switch her, you know, characteristics when they're...
But the point is, the first time she said ja-ja-ja to me in a G-chat, I was like, why the hell did you just say that? I had to learn, because I grew up in a little bubble without Spanish speakers.
But it's not a joke. It's an observation. He's saying, Spanish people laugh like
this
sometimes.
Yeah, it's still, right, even if you got it, it's not funny. Right.
Yeah, I got it, and I didn't think it was funny because he wasn't saying anything about it. He was just saying,
it didn't
hey.
Matter. At this point, it was over anyways.
Right, and by the way, we should say for the people who didn't watch, unlike the first three nights, the finalists have to come up with their jokes in about 10 minutes on the fly, meaning they have to have pre-planned jokes.
Yeah, they wrote four jokes in case both of the other people win, right?
Yeah, but what if he assumed Joe Dosh was there and his good jokes were to face off against Joe Dosh?
Yeah, well, that would have been a safe assumption, because,
That's probably what happened.
Yeah. And again, I think I made this analogy before, but I really did. It was like election night in the sense that I wasn't in denial. Like, I saw what was happening, and I acknowledged it was happening, but it should never have gotten that far. Castillo should not have gotten that far. He did. He took it fair and square once he got to that point, but he should not have won any of his first three battles. So I was pretty disgusted by that, but I was most disgusted by TJ Miller. Just an atrocious judge. There's no way to justify
it. He gave the win to Broussard, which is bananas.
He's got to be banned from the show, honestly, for what he did.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, they won't care. They'll bring him back.
I mean, you didn't think that was insane that he said Broussard won?
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying that there's no way they're kicking him off. If you think this is a place that's full of any sort of fairness and equity to him. No, of course not.
Jeff Ross is not losing sleep over it. So what do you guys think? But the truth is, it's a very nice story. Frank, you saw his mom. He's one of the only moms you saw in the audience. He's the doorman across the street. It definitely... He was crying when they went off air.
Yeah, that's not what I want from roast battle. I don't want mothers who are like, I'm so proud of my son. Like, roast battles are supposed to be, like, sarcastic and nasty. You know?
Yeah.
It was the wrong mood for the battle, I thought.
Yeah, I think if they do a 1-2 winner, then Mike Lawrence is going to wipe the floor with Frank Castillo.
Yeah. Are they going to have a tournament of champions at some point?
At some point, I think they have to have...
If they have enough seasons, I mean,
yeah,
are
and
we
then they could have like a tournament
of
champions of champions. Yeah, I'm sure they'll bring it back. It seems like it's pretty cheap.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it's very cheap. Yeah.
I mean, you're getting like Sarah Silverman, but you're at most paying her scale. You know, it's not like they're giving these people like $50,000 to show up. I don't think. Yeah.
All right, Mike.
I mean, they literally did announce the winner, like the guest, until next night, because it's just like a podcast where it's like whoever does me a favor tonight and shows up.
All right, Akiva, I think we're over an hour in, and we still have a whole other TV show to discuss.
All right, so yeah, let's switch gears. But Mike, this was so fun. Hopefully, there'll be a season 3, and we can talk about it.
Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
Mike, what do you have?
But I'll make my plugs nice and easy as well. Check out Rob has a podcast, Reality TV Wrap Ups, Post Show Recaps, The Hamster Factor, Survivor Historians. I do a bunch of stuff on there. Specifically this week, there's a lot out there. I'm even going to be doing something with Akiva in a couple days that I'll leave shrouded in mystery at the moment. But thanks so much for having me on, guys, and I look forward to hopefully coming back sometime in 2018 to cover season 3. In which case, the comedians will be presumably worse, and they'll be busting in Louis C.K. and Chris Rock to take place in the tournament.
That'd be pretty cool.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Alex here. Because we went so long, both with Mike discussing the roast battles and with our next guest discussing our next topic, I'm actually going to go ahead and split this podcast into two. So this was part one with Mike Bloom discussing roast battle, and part two will follow very shortly.